Welcome to The Cooler Ring, a podcast for manufacturing marketers brought to you by Cooler Partners. My name is Jeff White, and joining me today is Carmen Perry. Carmen, how are you doing, sir?
I'm happy to be here per normal, and you?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Look, I think today we've got a kind of a special kind of episode lined up for folks today, a bit of a different approach. Because so often, of course, as you know, we typically interview someone, and every once in a while, though, we'll take it upon ourselves to basically interview one another. Mm-hmm. And so, folks, I'm going to be mostly kind of trying to quiz Jeff today on some of his points of view that come out of the insights that we gathered during our most recent industrial buyer pulse research report. So this launched back in September, the Q3 2025 industrial buyer pulse research came out, and an awful lot of the findings in that research report frankly impact how you ought to be thinking about your website in 2026. And And Jeff has authored a couple of different POVs, we call them, on that research, which we'll make available with this show as well. So if folks want to kind of dive in and understand more of what Jeff is recommending here, you can certainly do that. And, of course, download the full research report as well, which we'll also link up. So, Jeff, you're on the hot seat today.
Yeah. I don't really mind being here either. But because I do think that this research has illuminated something that I've been preaching for a very long time.
And it's always nice when the research agrees with you, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and that you don't just create it in order to have something to agree with you. It's valuable as far as research goes. It is good for your ego, though. But in this particular case, what we're talking about is some of the findings in the research report highlighted the importance of the quality of the experience and of the accessibility and UX of a manufacturer website. You know, there's really kind of two key points here that we found that point to some changes and some housekeeping or an outright kind of revamp of how your website sort of works for you as a manufacturer. And so one of those is that we found that 77% of buyers said they'd obtained a price or a lead time quote directly through a manufacturer's digital tool without ever talking to anyone in sales. And, I think that's, first of all, it's pretty remarkable that the website is standing in for your sales team in a lot of cases. But it also means that if things aren't working, you may not ever find out that somebody had a failed quote in your quoting platform, or they're not talking to anybody, so you're not kind of having that dialogue back and forth. So there's a number of different things that kind of impact that.
Yeah, I mean, if the experience is substandard in some way, you may not get that information. You may not know.
Yeah,
they may not tell you.
Yeah, exactly.
You just may not get included in the comparison, especially if there's three or four other competitors who have, they can, for instance, get a lead time quote or something of that sort seamlessly from a competitor. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden, the clunkiness that in your workflow could be more highlighted. I guess, Jeff, the thing I've heard you say a lot over the years is, it's really a better idea for your website to do something rather than just say something.
Oh, for sure.
And that's kind of what we're talking about here, right? Is that the research kind of showed us that people are damn well expecting websites to do stuff.
Yeah. I mean, most industrial websites, they still treat things like quoting as a manual handoff, fill out this form and we'll get back to you, that kind of thing. But, there's an awful lot of platforms now where you may be able to upload a model or describe your part or reorder a part or product that you already have purchased or things like that, or get a quote on a number of different components. And, there's varying levels of quality in a lot of those tools, you know, in some cases, you know, I think especially the fact that, you know, an awful lot of people are doing most of their work on their phones now. You know, we see regularly in the statistics that we look at for our client and partner manufacturing websites, and it can be as much as 50% of the browsers visiting a particular website are mobile, sometimes even more than that. So if things don't work on a mobile device, or there's awkward PDFs that you have to download and read or sign, and, you know, calculators that don't adapt to smaller screens, then you run the risk of losing people before they even get started.
You know, I think so. I guess I can imagine an awful lot of the large multi-billion dollar global manufacturing brands. I guess a number of them aren't getting with this religion, I suppose, but a number are as well. But I guess my mind goes to those kind of more small and mid-sized manufacturers who feel within a certain niche or within a certain sliver of the market, they can really compete against even the big boys. And it seems like an area where, my thinking is they probably find it quite daunting.
In order to get there and actually roll this out, yeah.
I guess, what do you think is the thing that stands in their way the most? Is it because they don't need to have the technical capability, they can outsource that. Mm-hmm. Is it just I wonder, do they maybe not value it themselves as much, or
well, I, you know, what we're talking about here is not like just something that you're simply turning on either. It is, you know, it's a, for most manufacturers, it would be a relatively large endeavor to stand up a quoting platform that is one-to-one with what's going on in your ERP, as an example. So you may choose to have something that kind of provides notional pricing or higher level pricing for particular components or a subset of regularly ordered parts or things like that that you might have a whole quoting platform for that's relatively easy to do. But, you know, if you're a large manufacturer who's dealing in a lot of custom things, it may be rather difficult to actually provide an exact quote without somebody talking to sales. So maybe you need to get a little bit more inventive about how you go about using some of these things and enabling these processes for people to interact with your site to get that information.
Because I suppose it's worth noting, it doesn't have to just be about getting a quote.
Mm.
It doesn't have to be financial in nature.
No.
It can be configuration. It can be, I can think of a lot of different interactive assets that can help connect you to your prospect by adding digital value without necessarily needing to tap into the ERP.
Yeah, exactly. Like even in the phrasing of the question in our research report, it was around lead times as well as prices. So, you know, there could be other things, other valuable metrics that you could be providing to potential prospects. Yeah.
And there was the stat as well, that 82% of buyers in the survey indicated they had shortlisted a supplier without ever speaking to them. So that goes beyond just did you receive a quote or lead time or what have you without speaking to sales, but we're actually bringing somebody to the dance in a shortlist capacity. I guess it goes to show that, again, providing a way for them to do something on the site, to interact, knowing that it may be the only interaction they have with the brand pre-shortlist, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, in a lot of cases, what you're talking about there as well is not just, you know, the more functional aspects that we're talking about, like quoting and, you know, potential lead time information and things like that, but answering the questions that people have. You know, it's that old school kind of like, if I can figure out the questions that my buyers have and answer those questions, then that's going to bring me all kinds of traffic. That may not necessarily be the case anymore, but once people do arrive at your site, it should be able to answer a lot of the questions that your prospects or buyers might have about working with you, about your products, about your stance on certain things. You know, that there's actually content that covers that information on the site and can answer some of those questions so that you can get shortlisted before they talk to somebody.
I've got to think there has to be at least a few manufacturing marketers listening to this to say, can we maybe get the large enterprise SaaS people to play by these rules as well? Like to actually give us a quote. My goodness, sometimes getting a quote for a piece of software can be about the hardest thing on the planet.
Yeah, and you know, it's not like you have to go away and manufacture them.
No, exactly. Like they have no excuse. Right?
Yeah,
if we can't kick the odd SaaS provider on this podcast, what can we do?
No, that is true. But you know, there's other things that you know, as part of that, you know, getting your quote tools right is, you know, making sure that you're you know, that you're not doing hugely long forms and asking for absolutely every infinite detail with that, because people just kind of not fill it out in the end. I'm one of those people that actually likes to fill out forms on the internet, but I don't think most people are like that.
He's getting help for it.
It's a very strange 12-step program. But
you have to fill out forms at every step.
Yeah, you have to fill out a form each way, and each they get successively shorter. But the other part is thinking about the communication. We call it the microcopy that's on those elements of the site that are telling you what's going to happen next. What should you be putting in this field? Other bits of supportive information about how long it'll be before we get back to you. You know, those kinds of things to shepherd the conversation along for once you do receive that quote or information, how you're going to follow up and when they can expect to hear from you. You know, that's certainly going to make a pretty big difference rather than just hitting submit and having it go out into the ether and like, well, I don't know what's going to happen next.
Yeah. And you know, critically, you know, every salesperson wants to get that person on the line. They want, you know, I can't imagine there are a lot of salespeople that I enjoy hearing that folks are being shortlisted without ever talking to sales.
No, these are the Glengarry leads.
But those are that microcopy idea that you just mentioned about just making sure you're nurturing that interaction is a way that you can nurture it to the human interaction. Yeah. The sales team can get what they desire through that nurturing.
Exactly right. And the personality and authenticity of the brand can come through in that copy. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, very rote or mechanical in nature, or it can be. That could be your voice, you know.
Yeah.
So there's lots of different ways you can sort of approach that. And I think, you know, this, a lot of this ties into the second POV that I wrote coming out of the research report around this notion. You know, we found through the manufacturers that we surveyed that, you know, they were willing to spend $50,000 or more in a single online order, you know, and that is not insignificant. And it speaks to the growing segment of population that's very comfortable with e-commerce, whether that's in their personal lives or now, as we're seeing in their corporate positions, they're willing to spend real money through a web platform. And boy, you know, does that ever mean that web platform should be up to snuff? If, you know, if you're getting ready to put in, you know, the black card number to make that purchase, you should feel as confident as you do when you go through a Shopify checkout to buy coffee beans.
Yeah, I thought that he says that because that's the Shopify process that we go through every couple of weeks here at Cooler Partners, is to get coffee beans shipped in. So it's the process we know best, almost. But no, seriously, to me, it was a real surprise from the research, the number of respondents that were willing, that had the confidence in e-commerce, that to willing to transact at a 50K or above level. I think the way we used to, when I say we, I mean the global we, the way people used to think about investments in e-com for B2B manufacturers is that they thought, well, look, even if I get the technology there, the attitudes aren't there. Like the people aren't willing to transact in that manner. That's not how business is done. So therefore, we ought not invest in that. And the research shows just the opposite of that. It's like, oh, no, no, you're actually the one holding it back, probably. Like, they're already there. It's just whether or not you're providing that option.
Yeah, whether you're prepared to do it. And I think there's sort of almost two schools of thought on how this experience should be. You know, a lot of website development agencies and B2B marketers think that the solution here is to make it as B2C as possible, to make it as seamless as buying coffee beans through a Shopify platform, you know. But on the other hand, you have this idea that, you know, this isn't buying a pound of coffee beans. This is potentially purchasing some very complex machinery or who knows what, or consumables or anything of that sort in a business context with procurement rules at play. You know, there may be POs and other methods of payment rather than straight up credit card. It's not as simple as just having, you know, one ship to box. There's all kinds of extra information that may be required to give someone the confidence that this is a true B2B buying experience.
I think you need to, I'm trying to summarize how I think you're thinking about it, Jeff, which is that you need, it's okay to honor the complexity of the transaction and not try to gloss over the complexity of the transaction.
While still making it easy to use.
And still making that a beautiful experience.
And I think, you know, we call it the two website problem, you know, for when it goes too far the other way, where you completely leave the marketing site for a manufacturer and you end up in some kind of ERP-esque hell where, you know, there's a whole, you need to do webinars and training just to understand how to use the purchasing platform. The branding is gone, the navigation is gone, there's no labeling that is the same throughout. Categorization might be different for how the products are talked about in the marketing context versus in the ordering context, and you know, the regular search doesn't necessarily work, and all of these different things that can kind of happen. And not to mention the fact that, you know, far fewer ERP-enabled sales e-commerce platforms follow standard accessibility guidelines. So, you know, tabbing through form fields and keyboard search and all of those different things that are, you know, may be unreadable by screen readers and other assistive technologies may just fall down when you actually get to the point where you're willing to place that order.
It seems like deploying that functionality in that way is eroding trust at the exact moment that you need it the most.
Yeah, exactly.
And I know it's, you know, I guess it's one of the things I think you talk about in that POV, Jeff, is that notion of integration as a trust signal. If the experience is seamless, the trust goes up.
Yeah.
If things look like, if I have those constant cues that I'm in the same environment, this is the way it's supposed to be, I'm being told what's next, and then what I'm told happens next actually does happen next, and which sounds so simple, and people say, oh yes, I experience that in my consumer life all the time, but it's surprisingly rare in the B2B manufacturing context.
I think it is, and I think, you know, this may be why you know, be a number of manufacturers implementing an ERP platform with the promise of it also enabling them to pursue their own e-commerce platform. I would caution them to understand that it's not simply a bolt-on, that there's a lot of additional work that goes beyond simply slapping your logo into the top left corner of the ERP e-commerce screens and calling it a day. You know, like, even if you update the colors, it's still not quite enough. You know, we're looking for more integration signals than that. So, you know, maybe you're not able to make it look exactly the same, but it can be a transition into that platform and have consistent typography, consistent colors, consistent branding, you know, allowing for single sign-on if you have multiple platforms within the overall site architecture, you know, and that your that accessibility and usability are maintained that you've, you know, worked so hard to create on the marketing side that may simply not be carried over on the e-commerce side.
I think it was important information there, Jeff, because it, you know, I think it's important that people understand that you're not advocating that it must be a fully integrated, all one platform solution. I mean, yes, that is probably ideal and what will deliver the most dynamic experience, but you're not exactly closing the door on these kind of e-com add-ons. You're simply saying there's a way to integrate them more thoughtfully to provide a more unified experience. It's not about dismissing that notion entirely.
No, exactly right.
Is there anything else that we haven't really thought about through that lens of B2B commerce around designing for procurement and not consumers? Is it really just about the complexity of the checkout, or is there, you know, how else does that come to life, I guess?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you're talking about designing for procurement and not consumers, you know, those kind of single page, easy checkout systems may fail in the context of a more deeply integrated B2B buying experience. You know, you're going to have things like multiple user accounts and saved carts and purchase order fields and, you know, different approval workflows potentially that simply don't exist in B2C e-commerce. So you do need to have the horsepower of that harder working e-commerce platform, or at least have had somebody implement, you know, Shopify Plus or something like that in a manner that brings to life the required B2B experience. But, you know, then you're also, you know, you're thinking about any project reference fields and the ability to save and share or approve carts across different teams and things like that. And, you know, the other thing is that in most cases in B2B buying dynamics, you have different pricing for different customers. So ensuring that, you know, when you log into this system, that it remembers who you are and it's showing you the appropriate pricing information so that somebody doesn't have to follow up and try and get that fixed. You know, there's quite a number of different things that you need to be thinking about that, you know, that somebody from another organization's purchasing team may need to see in order to feel confident and comfortable in that platform.
Yeah, that's the right way to think about it as well. I think you stated in the POV, it's not whether or not your customers are actually buying online. It's whether or not they trust your site enough to transact with you online.
Yeah.
So if you know, and this is an area, like I think it can be hard sometimes for organizations to assess some of their own communications. But I think, oddly, this one's actually a little easier. I think most marketing teams that I've ever encountered, or sales organizations and manufacturers, if this process is falling down online, if their e-commerce is janky, everybody knows it.
Yeah.
Like, it's like the worst kept secret.
Yeah. Nobody's directing anybody to use it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They're actually scared if somebody does, because they think something's going to go wrong.
Yeah, this because the second it does, it creates 10 more problems than solutions. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my goodness, we have to call IT
or marketing. Deal with inappropriate charges or whatever, right?
Yeah. Exactly. So it needs to be buttoned down. And I mean, the brand impact of when this works, you know, it's making it easier for your customers to make routine purchases potentially that normally would require a bunch of different inputs or back and forth with, you know, customer service staff or others on the phone or fax, you know, like, so it really makes things easier for them. It allows you to, you know, leverage different tactics and techniques for upselling online. And things like that, like, you can take into account the power of marketing in that checkout flow to influence somebody to make additional or different purchases or higher end or things like that. So, you know, these are tools that you don't necessarily have available to you if you don't deal in e-commerce, and especially if you don't manage your own e-commerce platform.
And I've got to think, the imperative for people to cross this bridge sooner rather than later is there. As you were talking about, almost from the supply side of automatic replenishing of regular orders or something of that sort. That has to be some of the first corporate purchasing that will be done by AI agents. We can't be that far away from seeing more and more of that. If you think the previous bit of change happened to you fast, that stuff's that's coming way faster, right? And I fear that people won't be it's a great opportunity for those who are ready and able to take advantage of it, because they're going to reap a lion's share of the benefits, aren't they?
I certainly think so. If you don't have a platform currently that can actually take online orders, it's going to be that much harder to then build one to also take generative orders. That's wild.
Well, Jeff, they've given us lots to think about. Thank you for going through this. I think it's been fun to peel back the research a bit and just learn more about how you're thinking about it. Thank you for sharing.
Oh, thank you. It's always fun to attack things from an accessibility and UX lens.